And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to Thursday's 9 till noon show. It is Thursday the 29th of May at 9:05. Caroline thinks the year's going really quickly. I was sort of saying, I think it's going about right. You know, not too fast, not too slow. I don't know how you're feeling about it. Anyway, hopefully this weather's going to pick up soon. The outlook for the weekend, not fantastic. But look, we had a good spell and I'm sure the good weather will return. But nonetheless, we're indoors and we'll crack on with the show today. And it is the usual mix of the top stories, breaking stories, champion causes, speaking to people in the community, everything that you've come to expect from the show over the next 3 hours. And we want you involved in the conversation or indeed starting your own conversations. 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Comments at highlandradio.com is another way to get in contact with us, especially if you're listening to the podcast or the overnight replay. We can pick up your comments and carry them through to the next live show. And of course, you can watch the show on the usual platforms, YouTube, Facebook, and on X. It's Thursday, and you know what that means. There's tons of papers out, lots of locals, lots of nationals, the Farmers Journal, etc. Let's start with the Connell Tribune, and they're focusing on the health story and health stories. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin has attacked the Sialta decision not to recommend Letterkenny as the location for the Northwest Surgical Hub as not a disgrace that flies in the face of the facts about population base and the workload of Letterkenny University Hospital. And Caroline, maybe reach out to the Health Minister again just to find out what her office believes the status of that situation is. He said instead they've identified the need for an ambulatory centre at LUH. Sialta's decision is catastrophic and it's a barefaced excuse to justify the loss of the hub. The new proposal is only to upgrade daycare services at LUH. This proposal has no approval, no timeline, no funding, no planning, and it relegates the people of the county to second-class citizens. McLaughlin says the real question the Sialta officials must answer is why the chief executive, Tony Canavan, recommended Sligo in the first instance, and he must explain why Letterkenny was excluded. He said Donegal politicians never wanted to exclude Sligo. The critical mass of population and the workload of LUH, along with the remoteness of this county, is the best business case any county needs to make. No other county in Ireland has a bigger need for a surgical hub. Strong argument, hard to dispute. On the Donegal News this morning, fears that there could be a possible downgrading of the fire service in Letterkenny have been eased, at least in the short term. Members of Donegal County Council heard this week that a review of the workings of the fire service in Letterkenny is currently underway and is due to be completed in mid-July. In recent months, a number of local councillors have expressed concerns about possible changes to Letterkenny Fire Station, including some speculation in relation to the number of fire-related appliances based there. Now, of course, we spoke to, it wasn't local reps, we did speak to them as well, but it was the fire personnel themselves, and they were very clear that in the wave that followed improvements in terms of their work-life balance, what they get paid and what have you, that following on from what seemed like a success to that, to implement that, it would mean a reduced service. But it seems that's been somewhat deferred, which is good news, and it's good to speak out and it's good to raise these issues publicly because it does make a difference, and I think it has done in that situation. The Derry News this morning. A Derry primary school was forced to close yesterday after the discovery of a suspicious package. Ebrington Primary School and Nursery took the precautionary decision to close after police received a report shortly after 10:15 a.m. after the suspicious package in the area. Cordons were put in place in the area of Heron Way with Nelson Drive. The roads were closed, all homes evacuated during the security alert. Following examinations carried out by ammunitions technical officers, police declared the package to be a hoax device. On to the Nationals now, and the circle or the net is closing in on the Kinahans, the likes of Daniel Kinahan, etc., because one of the alleged leading lights in the Kinahan cartel has been taken from Dubai and is on his way back from Ireland. And for a long time, Dubai was seen as, well, going back a couple of years ago, Spain was the place, if you were under the scrutiny of Gardaí, that you could flee and operate your businesses. Then the net closed in on Spain, and a lot of people who operate the criminal world decided to go to Dubai. And you would have remembered that Ireland and the UAE came up with an agreement that would allow people to be deported. That's happening now. So what you're going to do is the places that people trying to evade the authorities can go are limited. Russia probably would be the next stop if I were trying to flee. But Sean McGovern, it's not a name really that's on the front pages all of the time, but he's one of the senior figures, if not the senior figure, outside of the Kinahans, in the Kinahana cartel based in Dubai. Well, he's been extradited from the United Arab Emirates after being in detention there since last year. The Dubliner, who's 39, was on a Defence Forces flight on an Air Corps Airbus C295 last night. The flight left the international airport in UAE at 8 p.m. As the plane must refuel several times. It's not expected to arrive in Ireland until later today. The plane departed. I don't really need to know where the plane went. News of the extradition was taking place news the extradition was taking place only emerged after the plane had taken off from the UAE. The authorities in Ireland feared advanced publicity may have derailed the operation on the UAE side. On arrival in Ireland, McGovern is due to be brought to the Special Criminal Court to be remanded in custody pending trial for murder and directing organised crime linked to the Kinahan Hodge feud. And the sense is that if this is successful, and it has proven successful, that Daniel Kinahan and others in that group will be next. Closer to home, although that is a home-based story, and latest figures from the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, well, it's led to them warning that the increase in toxic masculinity on social media is feeding the growth of violence against women being seen in sexual assault treatment units. This is something we should all be concerned about. We all have a responsibility here, and it is happening. You know, it can't be explained away or blamed on a certain group. We are seeing an across-the-board increase in sexual assaults, sexual violence, and it can't be mitigated by saying this, that, or that. It's right across society. The charity said in its annual report yesterday that calls to its helpline had jumped 22% to over 22,000. There was a corresponding increase of 28% in clients seeking therapy following rape or sexual violence, with the figure reaching 637 last year. Rachel Morrow, CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, said figures from sexual assault treatment units around the country last year showed that 4 in 10 of the people they looked after were subjected to physical restraints. 7% were restrained by the throat, and weapons were used in another 7% of cases. We believe, they say, these are very worrying signs that there is something happening in Irish society that requires urgent attention and action from all of us. Yeah. And it is the assaults themselves, but it's the nature of them as well. The very serious trends that need to be addressed. On to the Irish Daily Mail, and I'm glad now locally and nationally we're talking about the real issues in relation to housing. You know, it's about the facilities, and I've been banging this drum for years. It's about connection to water, it's about connection to the sewers, it's about connection to the electricity. Interesting to hear Paul Canning this morning on Our News talking about how we could be doing things better and fixing problems early on to get buildings built, so to speak. But nationally and down the country, in fact, Ishka Aaron has warned water shortages will hit all customers in Dublin in the next 5 years due to critical infrastructure issues. The chief executive of the utility, Niall Gleeson, has written to Housing Minister James Brown seeking an urgent meeting over the matter. Mr. Gleeson fears a multi-billion euro proposal to pump water from the River Shannon into the Greater Dublin area to meet growing demand could be delayed for several years by planning objections from environmentalists. And that's Dublin, but here locally we know our water infrastructure is on the brink. It wasn't dry for very long before the Milford water supply, a hose water pipe, went in place there. Another week of bad weather saw concerns over the water supply in Downing's Carrigart, in Buncrana, in Letterkenny, and was it Ballybofeist and Waller? Anyway, there was a few of them, I think so. So, you know, we're on a tipping point here as well. We've got very little resilience. If it stops raining for any period of time, we're in bother. So I would suggest that we have also issues with connections to water and the development of property in this county as well. And that's where the investment needs to be. But it's going to take a long time to fix, unless there's a huge political will to fix it. And it's going to mean that the housing crisis is going to continue to worsen. The Farmers Journal this morning, 7 farms received BIS payments of over €100,000 in the 2024 fiscal year, according to the Department of Agriculture's latest CAP beneficiaries list. The CAP change that took effect in 23 means that BIS payments are limited to $66,000 per farmer, but in the case of multi-herd partnerships, the cappings is applied at individual herd number level. The largest BIS payment in the country went to Talon Farm in County Meath, which received $120,000 plus change from BIS alone and $166,000 in total CAP payments. There is a list there. I don't see any reference to anyone closer to us here. That nature of farming probably more prevalent down the country. On to the Irish Daily Star this morning, and I referenced this yesterday. Didn't get any contact from anyone that this affects, but anyway, thousands of J1 students have been warned that they will be denied entry to the US or deported in a social media crackdown. J1 students go to America for work every summer, but under a new US process, applicants' posts, shares and likes will be screened. It means US government officials will snoop on Irish students' social media activity, and their J1 applications will be denied for expressing thoughts that the US administration does not agree with. And everyone talks about the thought police and blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't see those who are pro free speech or pro Trump, for that matter, speaking out in to relation to this. We have a government who are going to be going through people's social media to ensure that it aligns with the views of the US administration. I mean, that's not free speech, is it, by any stretch of the imagination? But we did give you warning about a couple of months ago, tidy up the social media, because we did predict this was coming. The move has seen America's further slip into authoritarianism under President Donald Trump. Senator Laura Harmon, Labour's higher education spokesperson, branded Trump's move deeply worrying. So there you go. You have to be careful what you say on social media now. But even if you express yourself, so even if you, you know, say, for instance, had, you know, very genuinely held pro-Palestinian feelings, not that you're going to go and do any harm with that, but even if you just were anti-Israel and pro-Palestine on this issue, you could find yourself being refused a J1 visa into the United States, which is not freedom of speech by any stretch. Do you remember that €150,000 Ryan Tuberty got? Well, he never paid it back. He still has that €150. And he has got a book podcast. And who was a guest on his book podcast? And they were laughing and cajoling and all that kind of stuff. Only our very own Taoiseach Micheál Martin. So whilst Tubbs owed, effectively, he doesn't owe it, but, you know, he would be asked to hand back this $150K to RTE, which is funded by you. Taoiseach Micheál Martin was chewing the breeze with him on a podcast. And reading the article here, Taoiseach Micheál Martin has defended taking part in former RTE broadcaster Ryan Tuberty's podcast, as he said he will not join in a witch hunt of the star. At an Oireachtas Media Committee meeting yesterday, RTE Director General Kevin Backhurst confirmed the presenter never returned €150,000 that he said he would during the financial scandal. In 23, it emerged Mr. Tuberty's salary was underdeclared by €340,000 over a 3-year period due to a tripartite agreement between the star and his agent Noel Kelly, RTE and Renault. Now, the side deal saw RTE underwrite a €75,000 commercial deal with the car giant, while Renault paid Mr. Tuberty for one year one. RTE ended up giving him €150,000 over and above. He said he would return it. It never came back. Micheál Martin doesn't want to get involved in a witch hunt of the star and took part in his podcast. Nice bit of insulation if you can get it. And finally, the jury in the Richard Satchwell murder trial will return to the Central Criminal Court today for a third day of deliberations. They're taking their time on it. It's a big decision, but into day three. The seven women and five men have so far spent 4 hours and 42 minutes considering their verdict. Mr. Justice Paul McDermott sent the jury out at 10:40 a.m. yesterday, but by 4 p.m. they had yet to reach a verdict in the case. Trucker Satchwell, 58, has pleaded not guilty to murdering his 45-year-old wife, Tina, at their home at Yohol County Court between March 19th and March 20th of 2017. I'd say they'll probably come back with a decision today. All right, our first guest on the show, just around the corner. I just want to say a very special birthday request to my mum, Annie Hunter from Malinhead, who's 90 today. Happy birthday to you, Annie, from your 10 children, your 36 grandchildren, and 9 great grandchildren. Wow, what a legacy. 10 children, 36 grandchildren, and 9 great-grandchildren. That's a handful of football teams in there. Happy birthday, Annie Hunter, up in beautiful Malinhead. Hope you have a really enjoyable 90th birthday. And lots of love from us all here at Highland Radio. And I'm sure our listeners joining in on that. Right, Brenda has had a situation. I found myself in with a speeding ticket not so long ago, well, a few years ago now. Brenda, what happened? Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Yeah, yesterday morning in the post, I got a reminder notice of a parking ticket that I was supposed to have, but it's from Dunleary on the 16th of May, and which I haven't been to at all. I was wondering what I should do about it.
And is there any photographic evidence? I don't know, with the because I was falsely claimed. They falsely claimed that I was sorry. I didn't pay a parking fee going through one of the tolls down in Dublin, and there was actually a picture of my number plate. So someone had, you know, duplicated plates or something like that. With a parking ticket, did they provide any evidence that your car was parked illegally?
It just is alleged, and it gives my number plate on it.
Right, okay.
That's all it says, yeah.
All right, and you weren't there. It's not you. What happens next?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll stick it out to the listeners. Brenda, you definitely weren't in Dunleary.
No.
Okay, and you don't want to waste your time sending off a letter going, it wasn't me. We really need to formulate the response correctly, isn't it? You don't want to waste any time, and you certainly don't want this racking up on you. Right, leave it with me. We'll put it out to the listeners and see what they have to say, Brenda.
Thank you very much.
It's our pleasure. Okay, so can you help Brenda? She received a parking fine in the post this morning. It's a reminder. It lists her car registration, but she wasn't in Dunleary on May 6th. So what should she do? What's the most effective process next? Do you ring? Do you send a letter back? Do you have to provide evidence? Just to save wasting her time. Did I have to go to the guards and get something signed to declare it wasn't me? I think I might have had to dispute it. Because how else could I have proved it? I think I did. Did I go to the guards? Anyway, let us know. 08660 25,000. We have received so many texts as it relates to traffic changes in Letterkenny. Just the traffic congestion, generally speaking. And we have to respond to listeners. You know, I'm not trying to drag it on into another day, but I just want to catch up on a couple of these comments so everybody has heard. A caller says, in relation to approving the active travel proposals, I hope they haven't made another stupid mistake like on the Port Road. The Port Road is a disgrace. The emergency services have no room or anything. Well, plans are afoot, apparently, to drop the curbs on the four lanes coming in. I'm not sure about going out to allow cars to mount the curb to let the emergency vehicles through. Isn't it great that they have so much money to spend on something to add to the backup of traffic, says another. Who are the brains behind this? Because they seriously need a new one. I've yet to see a bike on the one that's already there. This will be yet another tailback and late for appointments and work. So another hour or two now added on to your journey. The N2 rep Rebecca hit the nail on the head. We're talking about the Bonaghy Bridge for years and nothing will be done. And why? Because politicians representing the town have no clout in the Dáil. Remember the bridge in Fanad, which had been first proposed in the 1890s, was only built as part of a political deal 100 years later. Let's hope the people of Letterkenny don't have to wait that long. We were also talking about the situation at Letterkenny University Hospital. This after it was overlooked for a surgical hub. Which is sort of like a 60 million euro set project, which is ready to go and could be in place in a year or two. Sligo University Hospital, amongst a whole raft of other projects, is getting it. Letterkenny is not. And instead, there are plans, ideas at this point, I think you could say, of a ambulatory centre, which is like a surgical hub. Ambulatory means that you walk in effectively, but it would offer other services as well. If it were delivered and if the funding was approved and we were told it'll be open, you know, in the third quarter of 2026, it would be brilliant. But the problem is at this point, it's just a sketch, you know, and there's no approval of funding. Well, you heard Deputy McLaughlin, how he described it on the front of the Tyrconnell Tribune. But a caller says it's obvious Letterkenny Hospital is being denied services because the majority of people in Donegal don't vote for government parties. Don't try to make excuses, as that is a fact. The question that needs to be asked, says another, is how do we attract young doctors to Letterkenny? All the services there need to be upgraded before we spend any more money. We've no concerts, etc., for them to attend. Another, I had surgery in Dublin. I said to my consultant that it was a shame that I couldn't get it done in Letterkenny. He said that it would never happen, as young doctors want a life outside of work. There's nothing for young people in Letterkenny. Even transport is an issue. People have to travel to Dublin for concerts, etc. A few people talking of that. I certainly think in terms of attracting the right staff, the right qualified staff, you know, work-life balance is a thing. We've an awful lot to offer and people want different things. It's just having the right staff at the right grades on the right contracts. That would help. But I appreciate your views and they're not wrong. Caller says, in a continuous influx of asylum seekers and refugees and new people are still arriving from Ukraine to Donegal, more medical cards, more pressure on the medical services. Not fair on these people, not fair on anyone. There's no housing for new doctors or nurses or general medical staff. The county is in crisis with MICA. It's not just about funding. We use it. More funding if this influx continues. Well, there are more people coming. It's not really an influx at this point. You know, there's 2,000 odd international protection applicants in Donegal. It has increased by about 100 in a couple of months. I have the figures somewhere if you're interested in them. It's not like it's jumped from 2,000 to 3,000 to 4,000. It isn't in around the 2,000. I don't have the Ukrainian figures to hand at the moment, but I'm sure they can be dug out. But you're getting like sort of, you know, 50-odd people coming into the country a week now, 70-odd, let's say, to be fair. You're very welcome back to the programme. I mentioned to Lee Gooch from time and I think it's coming from my hips, and I'm not sure if it's actually restless leg syndrome. But anyway, I struggled to get sleep last night with that sense that you get. A caller says, this is a brilliant cure for restless leg syndrome. Full stop. It sounds mad. Put a raw potato in the end of the bed and your restless legs will be cured. That comes in from Jackie down in Cork. Jackie, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate that. I shall give it a try. Why not? Next time I have any issue. Right, now we are joined on the programme by Mark Murphy. He's Senior Policy Manager with the Irish Heart Foundation. Mark, good to have you on the programme. Thank you for joining us.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good. Right, now you're urging the government, your group's urging the government to fast-track legislation to ban disposable vapes. They're coming into such measures are coming into effect in Britain, especially in a border county, actually, you know, and I presume Britain in this case includes Northern Ireland. You know, an alignment would be very useful indeed, as I say, particularly here in a border county. Why is the Irish Heart Foundation campaigning so vigorously on this issue?
Well, like you said, the ban is coming in on the 1st of June in the UK, and that includes all four regions of the UK, including Northern Ireland. And we believe Ireland should follow suit. The government have signaled and they are planning legislation to ban these disposal vapes. But we know from other pieces of legislation, when there's a two-tier system on the island, it just causes confusion for retailers. It leads to people going across the border to get that product. So we think Ireland should ban disposal vapes in line with the UK and follow suit as soon as possible, because we know that disposal vapes are increasingly popular with young people. They are tailor-made to target young people with their price, with their colours, with their packaging and their flavours. So, and we've seen an explosion of youth vaping pretty much in every county in Ireland. So, and the government has said they'll take action. We really welcome that, but we just want to see it accelerated as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, vaping, when it first came to my attention, was a means of eliminating smoking from your life, and then eventually to stop vaping. And, you know, smokers who smoked before might often be conscious of the nicotine content in the vape juice that they use and reduce it down, maybe 3, 6, something along those lines. But I looked at the back of some of these disposable vapes, and young people who've never, ever smoked before, vaping 18, you know, 25 milligrams of nicotine, like, as addictive as that is, it's crazy, like, that they've never smoked and now find themselves incredibly addicted to these products, which, as you say, quite clearly have been designed and marketed for them.
Exactly. And I think there is a place for e-cigarettes out there. If you're a long-term anti-smoker, been smoking for 40 years and you tried every trick under the sun, but you're using e-cigarettes to quit smoking, that's great. But it's the way they're completely tailor-made, targeted for the young audience. And as he said, there are some products out there that are breaching the EU regulated rules of how much nicotine content there should be in there. And we know that nicotine is one of the most addictive substances on the planet. And nicotine exposure during adolescence can actually affect adolescent brain development. So there is a real youth risk there from using nicotine. So unfortunately, the horse is bolted, and we have a huge youth epidemic and a huge nicotine addiction among young people. So we're really trying to, deal with the consequences now. And we're going to see more products coming out, because the industry that is in charge of this, they will exploit any loophole that there is to try and get around the legislation, to try and keep their profits up and to keep their youth customers addicted to this product. So we really need to be wary of any future innovative products that's coming on the market.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think we need to approach this in a multifaceted way. And it reminds me of when minimum unit alcohol pricing came in. You know, I had concerns that this would drive people maybe towards drugs. You know what I mean? If it became... now, those in the... I have to say, those in addiction services don't believe that this to be the case. But there's definitely been a spike in drug use that sort of coincides with, you know, one action to try and limit alcohol use. My concern is, when this is successful, we're going to have, you know, tens and tens and tens of thousands of young people that are addicted to high levels of nicotine. Now, there will still be vapes available, don't get me wrong, but are we factoring in the fact that maybe this might drive them towards cigarettes? You know, we could find ourselves having the reverse of what older people are doing, transitioning from vapes, cigarettes to vapes. You know, young people having to service this really, really bad addiction. Could we see them transitioning from vapes to cigarettes? And if so, what are we going to do about it?
And that's a real concern, because no matter how harmful vaping can be, smoking is one of the worst things you can do to your body, and we really need to deter anyone from taking smoking. So I think there needs to be a dual approach, kind of a twin track approach to this. And the government have recognized this, and again, the UK, I'm going to look over to the UK, we need a dual approach where we regulate e-cigarettes, we bring in a ban of disposable vapes, we regulate flavors and plain packaging, we even look at increasing the legal age of vaping to 21, but then we look to what the UK is doing, and, you know, taking action on smoking. And the government has signed legislation that will increase the legal age of smoking from 18 to 21 in February of 2028. But we need more action on smoking. We need much more support. We need much more funding to go into cessation support to help people to quit cigarettes. But in the UK, they are bringing through like world historic legislation in the Tobacco and Vapes Bill, which will ban the sale of tobacco to anyone born after the 1st of January 2009. And again, that's going to be applied in Northern Ireland. And we here in the Republic of Ireland, we need to kind of look at what the UK is doing and see if we can match up and be aligned on an all-island system. So there is a huge concern that we can't push people back to tobacco smoking, because that is one of the worst things you can do to your body. So we need a dual approach to tackle e-cigarettes, tackle tobacco products, but also be wary of any innovative products that are coming down the line from this tobacco industry.
In terms of, you know, indoor smoking, etc., we were trailblazers in relation to that. Micheál Martin, I believe, was the Minister for Health at that time. He's now the Taoiseach. So, you know, you would imagine there couldn't be a better person in situ at the head of the government to sort of take on board what the likes of the Irish Heart Foundation is saying. Is there any reason being given as to why we aren't moving as quickly on this as perhaps we should?
Well, you're right that we have like one of the biggest supporters of tobacco and vaping control as Taoiseach. You know, Micheál Martin is probably the most know, health defining piece of legislation ever done in Ireland or potentially in the world, the indoor smoking ban. So we do have a great supporter there, and he does recognise the issue. But I suppose it's just the matter of legislation takes time, unfortunately. You know, the market is much quicker in terms of legislation. Legislation takes time in terms of drafting it, making sure there's no unintended consequences. But I would agree that we need to be much quicker, and the Irish state needs to be much more reactive and proactive in tackling vaping, innovative nicotine products and tobacco. But there's no doubt that we have a great supporter there in Micheál Martin as the Taoiseach.
And finally, I mean, you know, we know the dangers of smoking cigarettes, tobacco products, because we have time. You know, we can reflect on what's happened over many, many years. You know, vaping compared to smoking is still in its infancy. Do we know yet at this point what the impact of long-term vaping can have on our bodies? I mean, obviously you talked about the obvious danger. Inhaling high levels of nicotine as a young person, that's clearly, however you do it, not good, right? But is there any evidence yet that indicates its impact on heart health, for an example?
Well, there's definitely more and more evidence, because like that, the long-term evidence is starting to be put together. But compared to smoking, we don't have that kind of long-term evidence. But there is evidence shows that it can raise heart pressure, can raise blood pressure, but it can damage your blood vessels, your heart, even your brain or your lungs. So there is evidence there. The European Heart Journal published a report on this back in 2019. So there is evidence there that it is a health risk, particularly to your heart health. So the Irish Heart Foundation, we are worried that it will lead to significant health problems, potentially for this young cohort of people whose bodies are still developing, all their organs are still developing. So there is a concern there, and we need to take action.
All right, listen, thanks for all of your time. I do appreciate it. Mark Murphy, Senior Policy Manager with the Irish Heart Foundation. Right, now we got a call from a listener. My nephew was involved in a car crash. He never contacted the emergency services, but the other person did. One of the services that came out was the fire brigade. He's now getting a bill for €780 for the call out. He's only a student. Where is he going to get money to pay for that? There is an insurance claim in this incident. Can anyone advise about this charge? I thought emergency services were free. Well, of course, we made inquiries on this listener's behalf. We got a response from Donegal County Council, and it reads as follows. A fire authority is entitled under Section 35(3) of the Fire Service Act 1981 to charge users or beneficiaries of a fire service for services which it provides to that end. Donegal County Council invoices the users or beneficiaries of its fire service for services which it provides. In this regard, the person who requests fire brigade assistance and the user or beneficiary may or may not be one of the same person. The council has a waiver scheme in place for eligible service beneficiaries and also accepts payments in instalments. Further information on the fire brigade charges can be got on the Donegal County Council website or by contacting the Fire Brigade HQ on 91216766. So what I would suggest is that you contact that number, talk of your son's financial. I think you can work with them. And if they insist on a payment, maybe it can be done in stage payments. But ring them up and explain the situation. We have the number here for you. And maybe given your son's financial circumstances or what, they might be able to work with you in relation to that. I was contacted also by another listener who was involved in a road traffic collision. Theirs is a, and I'd really like some help on this one because they're quite worried about it. Theirs is a Donegal registered vehicle, and they were struck by a Northern Irish vehicle. And the Donegal registered vehicle, they had no responsibility in relation to this. Someone came out of a junction and smashed straight into the side of them. Gardaí and all were on the scene. But then it comes down to the insurance companies, and they've attempted to make contact with the Northern Drivers Insurance Company. And the Northern Drivers Insurance Company has said that we won't engage with you. So their advice from their own insurance company is that they claim off their own insurance, and then their insurance company claims off the insurance company in Northern Ireland. And obviously the concern is that, you know, through no fault of their own, they've no liability or responsibility, that they will potentially lose their no claims bonus. And of course, before you do that, you want to make sure you're doing the right thing. So has anyone else been out there? Anyone else out there who's had a Northern insured vehicle collide with them in Donegal? And how did you, or how do you go about dealing with the insurance company? We're making inquiries in relation to that, but it's just in case that it was just in case that maybe you could help there. Now, if you think people are getting off boats or planes and handing medical cards, all you're showing is how much of a tax burden yourself is on the state. Only a dole lifer thinks it's easy as pie to get a medical card that anyone can get them. Another caller says, tell the woman with the parking fine to ring the number on the fine. Sometimes if it's not your number plate, it's between the numbers, the camera pick up wrong. So they're saying effectively it could be the camera picked it up wrong. This happened to me a couple of times, and when I told them the car I drive, they say, oh, the number plate is from another car. Right, okay, that's what you could do. And it's possible too, there is photographic evidence that might be a different colour vehicle, what have you. So ring the number on the fine and just simply explain to them that it's not your car. In relation to the parking ticket, I got a letter to say I didn't pay a toll on the way there, and on the way back, I rang the company to make sure it was a legitimate document. I had to show them proof that I paid online. They had a picture of my number plate. If that lady wasn't there, don't pay it. I actually did. I actually remember now what I did. I think I had to get a sergeant in Glenties to I emailed. I must check that out to prove it wasn't me that went through the to prove it wasn't me that went through the toll bridge. I had to get a guard up here to sign my statement that it wasn't me. It's not the Port Road or four lanes. It's called the Derry Road. Ask any native of the town and surrounding areas. Stop the stupid renaming of places in Letterkenny. Is the four lanes the Derry Road or the Port Road? I think in the wider scale of things, it's not the be-all and end-all. But actually, those little things can be an annoyance. Okay, we're going to be speaking more on the show to our next guest on the show after these. Do we have enough respect for our defence forces? Well, Roisin Ní-Chlaoirí, founder of Confident Women, broadcaster and producer, is not so sure. In fact, I think you're quite certain that we don't. Is that fair to say, Roisin? And good morning to you.
Good morning, and hello to all your listeners in Highland Radio. No, I don't think we do. If you just look at how the Americans celebrate, and not just the Americans, but also many other nations around the world, they all have a day of a thank you for your service, or different days. Like in America recently, they had a Memorial Day. Just even look how they really respected their defence forces and the veterans or the members of the American military who died in active service or were veterans. So I think not. And I watched the Veterans Day last year, and I sent a proposal to the local politicians and asking them, could they put this in their campaign, their political campaign for the general election, to have an annual national thank you for your service day for the defence forces, if they would put it in their political campaign and also have it for the programme for government.
Yes, and I mean, we were reminded very recently and locally the risks that our armed forces take, or our defence forces take, sorry, I should say. Private Sean Rooney, of course, lost his life. And, you know, since then, other soldiers have gone out and faced the same risks, and others have returned. But that seems to sort of happen under the radar. You know, there's no sort of real recognition of that. Can you recall, Roisin, if that's always been the case? Or at one point, did we celebrate more the sacrifice and the risk that our defence forces take?
Absolutely. I grew up in Derry, and even Derry people, including Donegal, if you saw the Irish Defence Forces, you treated them with such respect. And then I also went to school in Naas in Kildare and in the early 80s, and anyone who wore the uniform or anyone was in the Defence Forces was treated with the utmost respect from the general public and politically and within the media. And what I've noticed in the last, say, number, I would say the last, say, let's say 15 years, I'm living down in Kilkenny now, and I've noticed that there isn't the same respect and there isn't even the same political goodwill and respect, honour and appreciation for the integrity and the respect that members of our defence forces put on their uniform every single day with the tricolour on their left arm, and they go into the barracks and they salute the flag. And most of all, and importantly, They joined the Irish Defence Forces to protect the nation, to defend the nation and protect the citizens. Mm. What an honour to do that and to actually swear an oath to the people of Ireland to do that.
And it's not just, the time served or the risk or indeed giving your life in some very sad occasions. Like, long term, people have been in the Defence Forces for a long time. It's a tough old transition from that life into sort of civilian life for many of them. And there's probably not enough support in that regard either, which probably talks to the state's respect for soldiers. And I want to sort of tease that out a little bit more. Obviously, we just have to say soldiers can't advocate for themselves. But in terms of the conditions, you know, when there were recent state visits, how they were treated, what money they were given to feed themselves, the conditions in which they have to operate. If that's an indication to the respect the state has for these people, it would make you wonder how far then we must be away from a, you know, a celebration day in their honour.
Well, you just have to look at it recently in the pay and conditions. It's thankfully now that they are really, they've improved. But when the state visits, was it the President of America arrived, I think it was, if my memory serves me right, members of the Defence Forces who were protecting the and just on duty for that occasion, they didn't get any extra pay. They were sleeping out in the hammocks and everything else. They didn't get great living accommodations or food when they were sleeping out. And that shows really what comes from the government, as you said, and the political goodwill. You know, if you mention Defence Forces to many of the politicians, they try to brush it under the carpet and sweep and move on swiftly.
But do you know what? Can I add to that? You know, if there's any old messy problem, flooding, a fire, a storm, the politicians, their go-to is, well, we should bring out the Defence Forces. Mm. Do you know what I mean? They aren't. I mean, they do help an awful lot in that regard, don't get me wrong. But it's not, you know, that's not what they're there for. They're not just sitting there waiting to clean up flooding. They do have a role, don't get me wrong, but that just, it just makes you think that they are the solution to all the problems, that they're just sitting there in the barracks waiting to do the messy work. Also, too, in terms of, do you think such a day might, return an increased respect amongst the general population, or maybe even, you know, national pride? I think we struggle with expressing pride in our flag, in our culture, and our nationality, for many reasons. But it is we're not as good as other countries, I don't think.
I think we used to be. I think we used to be very proud of our nation and our national flag. But over the years, it's become like, if you fly your flag, you are labelled with far right. And I think that is
before that it was a IRA supporter or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's a very strategic narrative from a political market and managed agenda to actually do that. So people are not. It's when you look at the psychology of media, the psychology and managing and influencing people through the media, that's where it came down. You were labeled far right. But that's right. Even when you think a national day of thank you for your service, that could be extended out to all frontline services as well. But even having children in primary schools, you know, having an appreciation of our defence forces and all our frontline services, have an appreciation at that young age, bring back that national pride, bring that back into our small local communities, in our rural areas, our villages, our towns and our counties across Ireland. You know, we need to get back that sense of pride within ourselves. There's no political will at the moment, you know, for a national pride. You know, in my opinion, everything's brushed under the carpet. I have a son over in Lebanon. My son's a member of the Defence Forces. You know, there isn't a day since Private Rooney was brutally murdered and his colleague really critically and brutally injured. And there's not a day I don't think about Sean Rooney's family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there should have been more.
More. Can I just ask support. About your... do you have a... I presume you do. We're proud of everything our children do. But do you have a particular pride in your son going out I to do. Lebanon and doing what he's doing?
You know what? There's nothing as pride for a mother. I'm proud of both my children, right? But my son, all he ever wanted to do was join the army. Mm-hmm. That was all he ever wanted to do. And, you know, I said to him, just go to university for a couple of years and then join the army. But he left and he joined the army.
He was determined.
And that was because it's all he ever wanted. He gets up every morning. And when he puts that uniform on, he's a smile on his face. Mm-hmm. He has a sense of honor, a sense of dignity and respect for the country and for the citizens of Ireland. Right. And he'd be the first one out there if anyone was in trouble or difficulties to go out and help them, even without the uniform on. He loves his country and he loves the defence forces and he loves his role.
And he's putting his money where his mouth is as well. Yes. A proper patriot. Okay, Roisin, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Take care. That's Roisin Ní Chéile there, founder of Confident Women, a broadcaster and producer. And she says that we should have something similar to Memorial Day, a national day to celebrate the defence forces, those that are operating right now around the world, those that have served this country incredibly well. And we've got a great tradition of that here in County Donegal, of course. And those, very sadly, who've lost their lives most recently, the very sad passing of Private Rooney. Do you agree or disagree? 086 60 25,000. That's our WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. Or feel free to give us a call to on 074 91 25,000. Good on you, Ryan Tuberty. Keep the money. RTE didn't clean up their act, pun intended, and they were very well rewarded for it. You mean the 750 million? Why give them more to squander, says a listener. Ryan Tuberty's actually quite popular in this county as well. Right, as he is probably across the country. It is the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. It's Thursday's episode. We've got so much more to come in hour 10 and 11, so stay right where you are. And Michaela Clark's going to join you very shortly with the very latest news, and we'll also bring you the obituary notices.